The lawyers amused themselves and their courtroom audience with a variety of picturesque, even playful images to describe the behavior of global leaders in technology and media. Apple's encouragement of illegal price fixing by publishers, said the U.S. deputy solicitor, was like someone who chauffeured drug dealers to their deals, making the iPad manufacturer as guilty as the publishers themselves of breaking antitrust laws. According to another jurist, publishers might have colluded, but only like mice trying to bell a cat, an Amazon cat. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. At the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan on Monday, December 15th, the atmosphere was lively and the language was colorful, but the stakes were high. Apple looked to reverse an earlier ruling against it, and Department of Justice attorneys struggled to hold their ground. Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, was there, and he has an eyewitness account for us. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, as always, we welcome you on Friday for a little look at the week's news in publishing. And often enough, you are in that courtroom or one of those courtrooms checking out what's the latest in the Apple price fixing case. And you have an account of that appeal session. It was quite lively. It was short, but rather lively. And the report is it went well for Apple. How did you see it?
Well, I saw it the same way. You can read my full account, of course, on the Publishers Weekly website. But yes, the accounts are right that Apple did indeed do quite well at the hearing, as the judges really did save their toughest questions for the government, especially Judge Dennis Jacobs, who repeatedly referred to Amazon as a monopolist that was engaged in predatory pricing. But I have to say, you really shouldn't read too much into Jacobs' questions. To me, it was pretty clear that he was just doing what a good appeals judge always does, and that's play devil's advocate. He was intentionally pressing the hottest buttons in what's a pretty hot button case. And what made his questions play so well in the media and made the hearing so dramatic, I think, was that U.S. Deputy Solicitor General Malcolm Stewart really did not perform very well under the pressure of his questioning. In fact, Stewart's inability to unpack the assumptions in Jacobs' loaded questions, and by loaded questions, I mean that Amazon was a monopolist and that Amazon was engaged in predatory pricing, that gave the impression to some, shall we say, not quite impartial observers, that the DOJ's case was, in fact, blowing up. But I would strongly caution against coming to that conclusion too soon.
All right. Well, we always like caution, but why? What's your view, and what prevents you from seeing Apple's good day as a sign that it's going to win the day?
Well, for a few reasons, and first and most important, because the question before the court is actually pretty narrow. The question is, did Judge Denise Coate err by deeming Apple to have participated in a per se case of price fixing, or should she have applied the more stringent legal standard called the rule of reason? Now, a per se case is a case that is so obviously illegal that it precludes a deeper look at why the parties engaged in the behavior they did. The rule of reason standard, on the other hand, requires the judge to look at the effects of the actions on the actual market and the motivation of the people who entered into the alleged conspiracy. Now, Apple's argument is that had the rule of reason been applied, the obvious pro-competitive effects of Apple's entry into the ebook market, along with its intentions for entering the market, which were entirely in their own interest, they say, that would have exonerated them. And Judge Jacobs really pressed this issue with U.S. Deputy Stewart, demanding to know why Apple and the publishers should be condemned for what he saw, or at least what he proposed, as breaking Amazon's monopoly. But here's the problem with that. You know, appeals are won or lost on the evidence that's in the record. And whether or not Amazon is a monopolist or has engaged in predatory pricing, as Judge Jacobs' question suggested, is not part of the trial record here. So it's one thing for Judge Jacobs to base his questions for Stewart on assumptions that Amazon has a monopoly and is engaging in predatory pricing, but he's going to have to issue his ruling based on the evidence, and there's just not enough evidence that establishes Amazon was engaged in any of his activities or had a monopoly. In fact, it's pretty much established that Amazon was following a loss leader strategy, and that's hardly uncommon in the book industry. And it also the evidence also pretty clearly portrays the publishers as really concerned about only one thing, and that's getting Amazon to raise its prices because they saw low prices as devaluing their products.
So what do you think happens now?
I think the rough hearing for the DOJ certainly adds a twist to the case, but I will stress that Judge Coate thought the case was very simple. And that despite his weak performance overall, Malcolm Stewart did actually make a few nice points about how she actually came to view this as a per se case. Basically, it was a two-part process. First, Judge Koh concluded that the defendant publishers had established a conspiracy among the publishers to pressure Amazon to raise its prices for ebooks. And then she found that Apple had facilitated that conspiracy. And Judge Deborah Ann Livingston from the bench conceded that that evidence was very compelling. Still, Apple does have a valid point here. Without a smoking gun, did Judge Koh make too many inferences about what Apple knew to be true? And if the court finds that there's enough doubt about whether or not Apple knew that the publishers were in fact colluding, then they could order Judge Koh to go back and do another analysis under the rule of reason. Of course, if the court does order her to go back and do another rule of reason analysis based on the trial record, Apple is still going to lose. As we know from Judge Coates' 160-page verdict last in 2013, she held that if she was forced to do a rule of reason analysis, that she would have found Apple guilty as well under that standard. So does the court take Judge Coates at face value and say, okay, she would have found them guilty under the rule of reason, so we're going to uphold the decision? Or does it send the case back to her to sort of make her show her work, as it were, in a new opinion? And if that happens, we likely are going to wind up right back at the Second Circuit for yet another appeal of Judge Coates' rule of reason verdict. Now, another interesting thing that happened was that Apple said that it thought it had proved its innocence, and it asked the court to just reverse Judge Coates outright and take them off the hook. I think that's pretty highly unlikely, and I think most people agree. But in another interesting request, they asked that if the case was going to be remanded for analysis under the rule of reason, that it be taken away from Judge Koh, that it be given to another judge. And in Monday's issue, I'll have a story that explores whether or not that is going to happen, whether or not that's even possible.
Well, you know, it's a lot of hardworking lawyers in that courtroom, and at least one hardworking reporter, Andrew Albanese. We appreciate your account of all of this, and it really has been great to talk with you throughout the years about this particular story. It has been a long story, and it looks like it's going to continue for many, many more months to come.
Yeah, I imagine we're going to be talking about it for quite some time on this podcast. And the lawyers, of course, are still going to be getting paid. But what's interesting about all this, too, is that at this point, there really isn't much more at stake beyond legal precedent. You know, everyone, all the publishers are cutting new terms. They're coming to deal with that, coming to deals with Apple. They're coming to deals with Amazon. And I'll be exploring the content of those new deals in the coming year. And frankly, if Apple wins, it's bad for the publishers. You know, it's not going to exonerate their contract, because Judge Koh has already found them to be conspirators, and Apple is not disputing that. And if Apple wins, it actually means that $400 million in their settlement, or that's consumer refunds, $400 million in consumer refunds from Apple are not going to flow into consumers' ebook pockets. So I don't know. If I was a publisher, as much as I would like to be able to point to something that says I'm innocent, I might want that $400 million consumer refund. So maybe I'd be writing an amicus brief supporting the government this time around.
Well, the ironies abound. And you know what's fascinating here? It really proves the old tale your mother told you. If you play with matches, you might get burned. And they got a little too close to the fire, and the consequences are really unfolding right before their eyes and in many ways that they would never have anticipated.
Definitely, I would say they got burned.
Indeed, they did. Well, Andrew Albanese, you have illuminated things. You haven't just burned things, or set them on fire. You've illuminated them for us in this particular case and throughout the whole year. And indeed, with this podcast, we draw to a close 2014 and your contributions to Beyond the Book. I want to thank you for joining us today and for joining us throughout the year.
Well, thank you, too. It's always a pleasure. I really enjoy doing the podcast, and I wish you and all of our listeners a happy holiday and a very, very happy new year.
Well, likewise, indeed. Happy holidays. Happy 2015. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Happy holidays, Jeremy. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book, and see you in 2015.